Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life in Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. First, let's look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. By Sarah Lovenheim, there's a new study, Bankruptcy Tied to Medical Bills. 62% of all bankruptcies filed in 2007 were linked to medical expenses, according to a nationwide study released by the American Journal of Medicine. That's nearly 20 percentage points higher than that pool of respondents reported were connected to medical costs in 2001. It's interesting to note that of those who filed for bankruptcy in 2007, nearly 80% had health insurance. Respondents who reported having insurance indicated average expenses of just under $18,000. Respondents who filed and lacked insurance had average medical bills of nearly $27,000. Since 2007, the number of Americans without insurance has increased, and filing for bankruptcy has become more difficult due to stringent laws, according to the report. The authors of the study, David Himmelstein, Deborah Thorne, Elizabeth Warren, and Steffi Woolhandler, say their findings, quote, reflect the U.S. healthcare financing system is broken. Middle-class families, they conclude, frequently collapse under the strain of the healthcare system that treats physical wounds but inflicts fiscal ones. It's interesting to note, separate from the article, that the majority of medical debtors were middle-class and had at least some college education. Three-quarters had health insurance at the start of the illness or disability that eventually contributed to the bankruptcy. Some other interesting statistics about recent bankruptcy filers. The average age, 44.4 years. Married, 43.4%. Average household income at the time of filing, $32,112. Median household income at the time of filing, $27,588. Attended college, 61.9%. Current homeowners, 52.3%. And active duty military or veteran, 19.4%. And from the Los Angeles Times by Mosi Secret and Stuart Pfeiffer, debt collection. Bad check letters are misleading, critics say. A company uses government seals in its messages, an act that consumer advocates contend is dishonest. With the seal of Santa Barbara County's district attorney on its cover, the envelope caught Jennifer Osborne's attention immediately. And when she opened it, Osborne read something startling. She was being accused of a crime. The letter alleged that Osborne had violated criminal statutes by issuing a bad check. She faced up to a year in jail and a $2,500 fine unless she made good, paid $215 in fees, and spent a Saturday at a financial accountability class. The letter stunned the college sophomore, Osborne, 20 years old. She says she was unaware that a $92 check she had written to her school bookstore had bounced, the result of what she described as a mix-up with her mom. Failure to pay in full and schedule class within 10 days from the date of this notice may result in your case being forwarded for criminal prosecution, the letter said. Alarmed, Osborne paid the money and signed up for the class, but there were some things she didn't know then. Despite this official seal, the letter wasn't sent by the district attorney's office. Osborne had no obligation to attend a class to avoid prosecution, and there was virtually no chance she'd be charged with a crime, In fact, the Santa Barbara District Attorney's explicit policy is not to consider prosecution for bounced checks under $100. Osborne is among about 2 million people a year who receive similar letters from Corrective Solutions, a San Clemente firm that has turned bad checks into a thriving business. The privately held company runs diversion programs on behalf of some 150 county district attorneys throughout the U.S., many of them in California. In return, the district attorney's office gets a cut of the fees. Corrective Solutions' biggest customer is the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office, which received more than $1 million in administration fees from the company from 2005 to 2008, records show. Orange County prosecutors received more than $490,000 in the same three-year span. Consumer rights groups and other critics have assailed the company's letters as dishonest and misleading. The letters carry the district attorney's seal, even though they're sent by a private company. Normally, most who bounce small checks would never be referred for prosecution. According to Deepak Gupta, director of the Consumer Justice Project at Public Citizen, an advocacy group that joined litigation, since stayed against the company when it was known as American Corrective Counseling Services, he says they are renting the prosecutor's seal and they are using the name and authority to collect bad check debt. In January, the company reorganized under Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, sidestepping several consumer lawsuits, and reemerged with the same management under the name Corrective Solutions. Letters sent by the company to bad check writers in Los Angeles County state that they have violated the law by passing a bad check and include the warning, quote, a conviction under this statute may be punishable by up to 4 years in state prison. But many who receive such letters cannot be sentenced to prison. Under California law, a person who knowingly writes a bad check can face no more than a misdemeanor and 1 year in county jail unless the loss was for more than $200 or the person had a previous bad check or theft conviction. And the L.A. County District Attorney's Office has told Corrective Solutions not to bother sending it a case for prosecution if the check was for $500 or less. The office doesn't have the resources to prosecute such cases, and it doesn't prosecute misdemeanors in many parts of the county, instead deferring to city attorneys. Corrective Solutions says its programs don't target people who inadvertently bounce checks. The company requires merchants to give bad check issuers a chance to make good on the debt before asking Corrective Solutions to intervene. The company said in a statement that the Santa Barbara City College bookstore sent Osborne 2 collection notices to which she did not respond before referring her case for diversion. Last year, the company began collection efforts on more than 87,000 bad checks in Los Angeles County, giving back more than $2 million to merchants. Only 150 checks were sent to prosecution. Out of that fiscal year, the company and the LA County District Attorney's Office took in 44% of the $4.2 million collected by the program, with merchants getting the remainder. That split has been roughly the same for the last 5 years. In Orange County, fees exceeded restitution during the last 3 years. 52% of the $4.6 million collected went to the company and the district attorney's office. The district attorneys for Los Angeles, Orange, and Riverside counties each declined to be interviewed by The Times. In short, the operation has been lucrative. The company's chief financial officer stated in an affidavit for the bankruptcy that fees for financial accountability classes are the firm's primary compensation. With a class of 35 students paying a typical fee of $150, the company could clear $5,000 per class. In February, 7,035 people attended such classes nationwide, according to a company email obtained through California public records laws. Bad check issuers have been unsuccessful in pursuing remedies in court against American Corrective Counseling Services and Corrective Solutions. A series of class action lawsuits filed over the last 9 years accused these companies of violating the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act by sending misleading communications and threatening action that was not intended to be taken. The original company filed for bankruptcy protection January 19th amid concern that the lawsuits could cause significant liability. The prospect of new lawsuits was further dimmed by Congress. In 2006, lobbyists for the original company persuaded Representative Barney Frank, a Democrat from Massachusetts, to support legislation exempting bad check diversion programs from the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. This backing was crucial to getting the exemption included in a broader financial services bill. Representative Frank now has second thoughts about the exemption. It appears to be that district attorneys in some of these cases have not exercised proper control, Frank said. Some members of my staff are looking into it. We do have some things on the agenda. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. To start out the second part of the show, I'd like to begin with an analysis from O. Max Gardner, who is probably the single most knowledgeable and successful consumer bankruptcy attorney and related market analysis in the country. Max has said that based on all that I have read and all that I know, I believe that we are in the midst of a false sense that the financial crisis is over. To some extent, this sense of foolish relief creates even more potential dangers ahead. The fact of the matter is that, in my opinion, the worst days are ahead of us and not behind us. The truth is that the so-called bank stress tests were a very sick joke. The Treasury failed to test the banks for all of the bad financial paper that the Treasury knows is either on or off their books. Credit Suisse is predicting that 2013 will be the worst year for residential mortgage foreclosures. The commercial mortgages, which were also securitized and re-securitized, were generally written for 5 to 7 year terms, and they are all coming due with no refinance markets in sight. Several commercial mortgage bankers have predicted that every major casino hotel in Las Vegas will be in Chapter 11 in the next 18 months. The FDIC believes that more than 300 banks will fail before the end of this year. I think this number is conservative. The rating agencies are predicting that more than 2,000 enclosed shopping malls will close in the next 18 months. The number of bankruptcy filings this year will come close to the 2005 number, and we will surpass those numbers in 2010. The close and, to some extent, incestuous relationship of Goldman Sachs and the Treasury is extremely troubling to me. I am concerned that the Obama administration has selected the same people who created many of these economic and financial problems to solve the problems. The government has taken no action to seriously regulate the derivatives, the credit default swaps, and the asset-backed securities that created many of our financial problems. These weapons of mass destruction are still locked and loaded and ready to explode for what will surely be a massive round two of financial misery. And although the government speaks of transparency, we still do not know such things as why Paulson, Geithner, and Bernanke allow Lehman Brothers to fail in September 2008, but then just one day later saved AIG. Or why last November this same trio agreed to absorb $301 billion in bad Citigroup paper when conventional market insiders valued this paper at no more than $150 billion. The president should not be preaching the return of good times, but rather stressing the importance of living within our means, of cutting all non-essential expenses, of saving money, of repairing our old cars and not buying new ones, and in general of becoming a frugal nation. There are no quick fixes. There will be no more easy credit. There is no easy way out of the mess. There are no painless fixes. The morphine of the stimulus will soon wear off, and we will see the stark reality of our financial follies. The darkest days are ahead of us, and we are still in a very deep tunnel with no real light at the end. Again, that's a statement from O. Max Gardner III, who I've been watching for at least 4 years now and has been far ahead of the market analysis in seeing and predicting the future based on current conditions. And for the purposes of this show, particularly life and debt, I just want to repeat the real teaching point that Max has made. We should be stressing the importance of living within our means, of cutting all non-essential expenses, of saving money, of repairing our old cars and not buying new ones, and in general, of becoming a frugal nation. That is exactly what this show has been trying to do for the last year, giving you weapons and tools, knowledge and understanding to deal with your financial situation, to take some control of your financial life in some ways despite what's going on in the reciprocal environment. Over the last several weeks, I've been going over the financial CPR from Professor Elizabeth Warren's book, All You're Worth, which has really been the handbook for this course. What I've been discussing is what to do when bad things happen. We've gone through drills, training sessions to do some CPR, but when a real emergency happens, when, for example, you have set up your security fund, but the money is getting really tight, what do you do? It's not, as you have seen with the economy, that we can ever promise that things aren't going to get tight, even if you've been following all of the principles and have had some good luck building your financial situation according to all your worth. But we can give you some tools to help you to stay calm and to keep you in charge of your own future. And as I've been doing over those last few weeks, the major points are to stay in control, which means essentially to not panic. It's really important. And panic can happen at any time. In a financial sense, you can get laid off from your work. You could get a collection notice in the mail. You could get a medical bill that is unexpectedly not covered by your health insurance. It really is important at these moments that you have to keep mental clarity. No matter how bad things get, you do have options and you have to maintain that sense of calmness so you can weigh your options carefully. You need to keep your wits and not panic. Even though you are in financial trouble, you can still be in control. As I've said before, creditors have rights, but you also have rights too. More importantly, you are the one who earns the money. You have control over your bank account, your house, and everything in your name. You are the one who decides which creditors get paid, and you are the one who decides whether to sell something, to give it back, or to work out a payment plan. These are your decisions, and you are still in the driver's seat. So don't panic. Keep calm. You may be forced to make some tough choices, but these are still your choices. If you can keep your head, you can always get through this. The second point is to react quickly. When something goes wrong, you need to create a plan and you need to do it quickly, which is why in the course of this show, we've been practicing financial CPR. The time it takes to respond can make a very big difference. Of course, that seems obvious when you're thinking about it without the crisis coming up, but in fact, many, many people do delay. The greatest danger when you get into financial trouble is not bill collectors. Of course, they can be annoying. The greatest danger is misplaced optimism. People tend to avoid the problem by making up things that have no basis in fact or are highly improbable. I'm sure I can find another job immediately. My husband will be getting better soon, or we'll patch things up after a little while in our relationship. As I mentioned, many job counselors tell people who have lost their jobs to keep up their lives just as before. Use the credit cards, keep everything normal. Well, the truth is things aren't normal, and the speed with which you react may make the difference between a small fender bender and a head-on collision. So when the crisis comes, the first thing you need to do is to trim your spending. You go back to your CPR drill and look at the list of cuts you decided you could make if you had to. And in the crisis, it's the time to start cutting and cutting fast. Use that list and start working on the priorities. And the real reason for this is that you have to have enough to pay your bare necessities. You know this instinctively, but if you take the time to think about this now, You'll be ready to react more quickly if the need ever arises. You give yourself a timeline in these crisis situations. Since you really don't know when the crisis will end, you should create a schedule for yourself. If you've created the security fund that we've discussed, make sure you have options once that security fund is gone. You may have to move to a smaller house or apartment, take a second job on the weekends, but as a bottom line, be proactive so that you can stay in charge of your life. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And I'm continuing to discuss what to do in terms of a financial crisis. Point number three is call your creditors. If you are in trouble and you know you'll miss a payment, get on the phone. This is tough and it can be certainly embarrassing, but your creditors will be much more willing to work something out if you call them before they have to call you. Explain what happened, you lost your job, somebody got sick, relationship problems, and tell them you want to make good. Some creditors, such as student loan issuers, utility companies, medical providers, have special provisions to accommodate people who are facing a job loss, a serious illness, and they do take these into consideration. You will be much less likely to get hammered with late fees and collection notices if you make the first call. You can ask your creditors if they will work out a repayment plan for you, perhaps just a token payments for a few months until you get back on your feet, but make sure you're keeping records of whatever you agree upon. You may need this later. And of course, the most important rule is don't agree to anything unless you are absolutely certain that you can meet your end of the deal. If you are out of work and you don't have a regular job, just tell them what is wrong and that you'll try to work out a plan as soon as you can. You don't commit unless there's some income coming in. Be completely honest and never make promises you can't keep. Then the fourth point is pay the bills that matter most. If things get really tight and you don't have enough to cover all your expenses, then you pay the most important bills first. For most people, that's the home, the rent, and then maybe the car or the health insurance policy. You have to figure out your priorities. Sure, you want to pay everything, but this is a little like deciding what to save in a fire. You have to save the most important things first, then you can save what you can. You can't try to save everything at once because it may be way too much to handle. If you have one or two particularly noisy creditors, it's often really tempting to send them some money just to get them to leave you alone. But this is really a mistake. You need to work out the payment plan that makes sense for you. And it really doesn't matter what the bill collector threatens or even who is making the demands. If serious trouble is coming your way, you should be fighting for the things that you care about, not trying to quiet down the most aggressive bill collectors. So you prioritize and you pay the bills that matter most. And the fifth point is you borrow only as a last resort and you keep it in the safety zone. Of course, you have to cut out the fund spending that we talked about in our formula, the wants. Now, at this point, you have also drained your security fund and there still isn't enough money to go around. What do you do then? Well, if you don't have enough money to keep bread on the table, to get medical care, or keep the lights on, then, of course, you have to go ahead and borrow some money. This is sort of a taboo when things are smooth, but in a crisis, you may have to go into debt, but you have to do it carefully. The first rule is to make absolutely certain that there is no other way out. For example, could you earn a little extra cash? Could you sell something that is valuable, that is a luxury item you don't really need at these times, or something that you could do without? You have to exhaust every possible reserve first before you borrow. Borrowing inevitably costs big time in the future, so you do it only when you are sure that there is no other option. And the second basic rule is that you borrow for bare necessities only. We've spoken about this before, but I need to make it doubly clear. Once people do start on that slippery slope of debt, it's really easy to put any old thing on the credit card. So I repeat, this is only for bare necessities. Housing, transportation, food, utilities, insurance, and that's it. Not for anything else. And the third rule is safety, which is really more important than even the interest rates. And as a bankruptcy attorney, I've seen people violate this rule, and it has been devastating for them. For example, a home equity loan or a car title loan are very, very attractive since the interest rate is lower and the advertisements are coming at you. But the last thing you should do when you get in trouble is put your house and your car on the line or any of the treasures that you have in the category of bare necessities. It will be tough enough to keep up with your mortgage payments and your car loans, so you shouldn't make the payments even bigger when you are starting to get in trouble. It's crazy, and it's a losing proposition. So what do you do? Well, the first thing you do is you start by stringing out your payment. You request deferments on your student loans, hold off on paying the cell phone, the dentist, the doctor, and other outstanding bills for anything besides your bare necessities, home, utilities, car payments. You will certainly get some dings on your credit report, and your cell phone may get shut off, but these creditors probably won't charge you exorbitant interest, particularly if you've called ahead of time, and they won't kick you out on the street. The next thing, if this is still at all possible, and it's becoming less likely right now, you take the lowest interest credit card you can find and charge the necessities. Seems like right now everybody's interest rate is getting bumped up. Credit cards are dangerous. And yes, I've told you in the past to cut up your cards, but I've also said that cards are for emergencies, and this is an emergency. Put groceries on the card and make the minimum payments as best as you can. But the bad news, of course, is that you pay more for this kind of debt than you would for a home equity loan. Yet the good news is that you won't risk losing the place where you live. If push comes to shove, you can discharge your credit card, medical debt, and so forth in filing a bankruptcy. Now, if you've been setting up your life as we've discussed, what about the money sitting in your retirement account? Should you cash it out? Well, the response is no. That's because the law puts special protection on your retirement account so your creditors can't get to that money. Those protections are strong for a very good reason. Of course, you're going to need that money later on, maybe more than you need it today. Cashing out your retirement account is the most expensive kind of borrowing since you also get hit with extra tax penalties. So don't cash it out and don't borrow against it either. Hold on to this money for your future. That's hard and most people don't follow this rule. And beware of debt peddlers. When you get in financial trouble, it seems like the offers come flying from all sorts of directions for new debt that you can take on. It sounds crazy, but bill collectors routinely call to offer more debt in the same breath they demand payment on your old bills. Taking out a consolidation loan will somehow solve your problems. And now hospitals and other medical providers increasingly collect their fees by steering people to high interest loans, so be especially leery of their offers. When you owe someone money and they are offering to put you in touch with a finance company, or to give you more money, stop, go the other way. But of course, they can be really persistent about pushing these offers, and they will call you day after day, and if you don't respond, they may call your spouse or your office. But the bottom line is just say no, be prepared to say no, and keep saying no. And don't be surprised if a bill collector tries to put a wedge between you and your spouse or your employer. It has happened that when it comes to collecting money, nothing really is sacred anymore, unfortunately. But you need to just hang up the phone and make a pact with your spouse to do the same. So that's borrow only as a last resort and keep it safe. We'll continue next week. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeindebt@gmail.com. I'm I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.